The city budget is more than balanced numbers. It is a statement of aspirations for our city. The important balance we strike here is not so much in the numbers, but it's in the services and the programs and the facilities. We balance police officers, firefighters, libraries, recreation centers, roads, refuse collection, festivals, and all kinds of other things. The significance of the balance is not found in the money. After all, that's the easiest thing to do. It's not even complicated math. It's in the quality of life we can deliver. It's what do the numbers mean. This budget contains our best thinking. It's the wisdom of our voice of the customer input in all four of those sessions and our resolve to not let others decide our future. Looking around New York State right now, I see cities that are losing the option to make their own decisions. The loss of financial capacity and flexibility is forcing bad decisions on them. That is not what I intend for our city, and that is not what's in this budget. This budget is built on the restructuring and investment strategies that began with last year's spending plan. With the cooperation of our unions, we stood up to the challenge of an almost $50 million deficit with an early retirement program that helped to reduce our complement by almost 200 people. Along with a number of other reductions and efficiencies. It was difficult, but we resisted the temptation to put it off, the hard choices, as some would have us do. So as you will see in this budget, it pays long-term benefits. It was not just a matter of resolving last year's problem, but resolving the problem that we face in the future. This budget is buoyed by a one-year cash influx from the state of New York that you've heard about, the famous spin-up. It's a great help this year, and we appreciate the assistance of the governor, the lieutenant governor, and the legislature in doing it. We hope that it's a precursor of a permanent solution to Rochester's need for a fair share. If it isn't, we'll start out next year with a $16 million contribution to our deficit. So I appreciate the work of the community coalition and the media partnership that's kept up the drumbeat on this issue. It is an essential part of the eventual resolution of our financial challenge. This budget will benefit from a combination of factors in the current year: an increase in sales tax revenue, a mild winter, good management of overtime, and other factors that will produce a surplus this year that we can use to address the deficit next year. This is not a budget that completely solves our long-term problem. The structural imbalance that threatens our future remains, and it's that challenge that I described in my State of the City address. We need, ultimately, to change the way in which we finance cities like ours. As I've said repeatedly, long before cities become financially bankrupt, they become culturally and socially bankrupt. Long before we see the massive reductions in police and fire personnel that are occurring in some places in New York now, we see a loss of things that make this city attractive, a reason to be here. Recreation centers, libraries, festivals and events, neighborhood revitalization efforts, all of them go first, and all of them have an impact about whether you want to live here or not. I'm pleased to report that in this budget I present today, we do not start down that road. We will continue to invest in our community, the cultural and social well-being of our citizens, as well as the infrastructure, public safety, and economic future. Now, we will do it at the same time that we preserve the flexibility to address our uncertain future so that we can both manage and invest in that future. And that is the balance that's so difficult to strike. So I'll give you some highlights of the budget that results and then talk a little bit about how we got there. I'm presenting to Council today a budget that will not only stay within the 2% tax cap that's been so much discussed, but will not raise the tax that's levied on our system, our citizens at all. By not increasing the levy, the 4.5% increase in property values that we've experienced for the homestead people, the homeowner's tax rate will actually decrease by about 3.6%. We will avoid, at least for another year, the need to borrow to pay for our escalating pension mandate. The borrowing is, in my personal view, a siren song. It is a way, a classic way of putting off and making more expensive what you need to figure out how to deal with today. And so I'm pleased to put that off again. And if I can do it, we're going to put it off forever. We will use only about $3.5 million of our reserves, and the reason for using this amount is it gives us confidence that the things that we're going to do this year are things we can afford, not only this year, but next year and the next year and the next year. So we don't make decisions this year that have only a one-year life to them and eliminate our flexibility. We're going to maintain the number and the hours of operation of our branch libraries, our recreation centers, and our neighborhood service centers. So all of that kind of service will remain. Mm-hmm. For our police department, we're going to maintain the mounted patrol. We're going to purchase 50 additional vehicles. That was 50 this year, 50 next year. It's over 100. That's been delayed for a while, so it's something we're, in fact, going to catch up on in this budget. We continue to authorize promotions in order to maintain the supervision levels, and most important of all, we're going to authorize a new recruit class of 25 individuals to maintain the complement. Now, we believe that in that class, we will have the highest level of minority representation in the history of the city. For our fire department, we're going to purchase 2 new fire trucks. That, along with the 7 that we purchased this year, will increase to 9 new trucks over the last 2 years, this year and next year. We're going to fund the replacement of individual firefighter turnout gear and breathing apparatus. We're going to maintain officer positions to continue supervision and safety responsibility. And again, most importantly, we're going to authorize 2 new classes of recruits. Now, they'll be smaller, 12 to 15 each. One in this August or September, one in next February. The idea there is to try to maintain a balance of the commitment, make sure that we have people coming online when other people are on vacation or retiring, so that we minimize maximize the impact of these new classes on the way in which the department is managed. And again, as a result of the efforts, much of which was led by Lovely Morin, who's here before us today, we're going to have the highest representation of minorities in those classes we have ever had. The next slide that you'll see here talks about some of the budget enhancements that we have, things we're doing this year that we haven't done in the past. And many of those, I won't read them all to you, but you can see that it goes from $500,000 we're putting into a program that provides loans and grants to small businesses in the neighborhoods in order to spur investment in an area in which they don't have access to the ordinary financial resources. We're going through a series of other events here, including maintaining the vacant properties that we've talked about with additional money, all the way down to things that we're doing here that seem small, but are in fact important for the quality of life. For instance, enhancing in the fire department the capacity to have outreach for fire prevention education programs by hiring some new part-time people, and things like the AmeriCorps program and other programs that support the quality of life. Capital for this city is an important part of continuing to grow. One of the things the city has done for many years, and we're continuing to do, is 2 things. We have, in fact, a capital plan that reaches out more than 5 years. So we're thinking about what it takes to maintain the infrastructure and the other capital assets of this city. And we've been doing this for a long time. We don't always do all we want to do, but we do think about it, and it's a deliberate plan. The second thing we do is we invest cash capital. It means we take cash and invest it in some of the capital projects. That does a couple things to us. It keeps down our borrowing so that we're not getting ourselves in a situation where eventually the borrowing costs consume so much of our budget that we're restricted in terms of the other things. And also, it gives us flexibility in the future. It's a number we can vary so that we have the capacity to maintain things. There's a over $70 million budget this year. $27 million of it is debt, and $36 million of it is cash, and that gives you a sense of the level of flexibility. There are very few of any municipalities in the state of New York who maintain this level of flexibility, and it has stood us in good stead. You'll see some of the improvements we've made on the next slide here that will list them. I won't read them all to you again, but it gives you some sense of where it is our capital goes. Improvements in the water system. You'll hear in a minute here that the cost of water is going up slightly, but one of the reasons it's going up slightly is we're continuing to invest in that system and have to continue to invest in that system. Some of it, quite frankly, mandated by the federal government. But remember, we have the best tasting water in the state of New York here. So we need to be nice to it, and we're going to be. You'll see here that we're continuing some projects that are important to us that we've invested money in before, like the new marina at the Port Project, like Midtown, and items of that nature that are on this list. You also see us continuing to invest here in areas that are important to the neighborhoods and the city in general, everything from what may be somewhat mundane, the rehabilitation and resurfacing of streets, additional transportation funding that you see for bridges, continuing our focused investment program, which invests in focused neighborhoods, replacing sidewalks, things of that nature. Those things sound mundane. They sound mundane, replacing sidewalks. That is, though, an example of the kind of thing we have to be careful we don't lose sight of in this kind of financial pressure. The city not only has to be good, it has to look good. And again, there are a number of other projects that you see here, but if you look down towards the list where you talk about smaller investments, you see some of the things that really make a difference in terms of quality of life. The design and construction of bike lanes, for instance, across the city, and the purchase of new play apparatus at our recreation centers. Anybody who's been to one of our recreation centers now lately will see the new play apparatus we have at all of them. Now, it's one thing to buy it, it's one thing to put it there, it's a second thing to continue to maintain it. So, in fact, when children go there, it's number one, safe, it's attractive and appealing to them. And so it sounds like a small amount of money in some senses when you look at the total, but it makes a huge difference in those individual areas. Now, we didn't get to this point in this budget with the deficit we face and the limits in terms of our revenue without some expense discipline. If you look at the total budget, you will see that despite the significant increase in our pension and medical costs, the total increase in the budget is only about 2%. And one of the ways we did that is to control expenses across the board. Each department has reduced expenses in some way in order to contribute to this. And there will be an impact on our employment. It'll be reduced in total by 16 full-time positions. Now, the bulk of those are already eliminated, and most of them were funded through grants that have expired. So there's 6 potential layoffs here, 3 of which we know will not occur, and we hope the rest will not as well. But that potential exists. We have to continue to adjust the way in which we render these services so that we are as efficient as we can be. And there is sometimes some push and shove in that's unpleasant. But we're not going to be able to preserve the city in all of these investments I talk about unless we're as tough on ourselves as we are on other people and other parts of the budget. This is a very minimal impact compared to last year, but it is an impact, and it shows the adjustments we need to make. Our full-time employment for the city is now about 2,700 people. That's the lowest it's been in any kind of recorded history we've had here. But if you trace the population decline of the city, the city was once 330,000 people, it's now 210,000 people. It's a relative decline that is matched, in some senses, the population. So the ratio is maintained. But the ratio has changed. We have more policemen now than we did 40 years ago. But we have fewer of other kinds of employees. That tells you a couple things. It tells you that there's some sense in the way we made these judgments, but it also tells you something about the nature of the city and what the city's demands are. Nonetheless, when we talk to people in Albany and we talk to other people with a number like that, they can't say that this city hasn't taken some responsibility for its own problems. We have. The wage increase through the cooperation of our unions this year is limited to 1% for police and fire, and we budgeted 1% for everybody. And that's a decline compared to what it's been in the past, but it recognizes the reality of the times that we're in, and quite frankly recognizes what's happening in other public municipalities. We've proposed increases in water that I talked about, and in local works there will be no change in the refuse charge. These are fees that are paid based on the service you receive, so they're paid by the people who receive the service instead of paid by everyone. And so they have an unequal impact, but that impact relates to what it is you use or consume in that service. Now, the typical homeowner, looking at the next slide here, the typical homeowner, the impact on the typical homeowner here with the reduction in the tax rate, the other charges, the fact that the assessment has changed and other things have changed, is about a little over $21. If you took the non-homeowner, the commercial property, the impact would be about $68 a year in both cases, relatively small amounts. You got to be careful here, don't you? Because nobody's typical. You know, this is like Lake Wobegon. All of the children are above average. And so how much an individual pays has something to do with how much they use with respect to these particular charges, and, of course, what their assessment is, whether their assessment has changed last year. The point here is not that individual costs don't change. The point is this year the city is not taking any more money from its citizens than it took last year, and these numbers are lower because of that. And that is a fact that's important. We've recognized people's capacity to pay in a year in which we're able to manage our affairs, so we're not asking them to do more. And that is true, even though the numbers with respect to individuals will and will vary. Now, there are all kinds of details in the budget book. It's a magnificent document for some and a painful one to others, but I'm not going to go through it all. Bill Ansro is going to be available for the media in room 309 for those of you who are interested in the detail. And, of course, it will be posted on the web, and you're welcome to review the detail as you want to. What I want to do here is spend the remainder of my time pointing out some themes and principles that I consider important to understanding this budget and to understanding the city's fiscal situation. I've tried, and we've all tried here, not to drive this budget by getting lost in the details and the numbers. We're trying to drive this budget by what it is we're trying to accomplish here, what are our challenges, and then make the numbers fit that as opposed to the other way around. So we need to understand what those are and what we're dealing with here. As I discussed in the State of the City, despite our best efforts, the structural deficit that we face and most cities like us face in New York will require more assistance from the state to provide a fair share of aid. However, that's not the only thing it'll require. We need also to make efforts to bring this to under control and to manage this issue. What you see in this slide is the way in which we've balanced this or eliminated this deficit this year, how we dealt with that $50 million or that $40 million problem. And you can see at the top, for instance, that the state aid took a big bite out of it in the beginning, and that's kind of what I'm talking about in terms of needing assistance here. If we didn't have that, think of what it would have taken to get this problem solved and what the consequences would have been for the first part of my presentation here. And there are a range of other impacts that are up there, and it's discussed in detail in the budget book. But what I want to do is just focus on a couple parts of it that I think are important here, because they are places in which we have had an impact and in which I think we need to have an impact. We need to do that for a couple reasons. First of all, we need to control our own destiny. I don't want us to get in a situation where 2 or 3 years from now we're destitute on the steps of Albany. And second of all, if we're going to have credibility in Albany and credibility in other places, we have to demonstrate to them and to our citizens that we are prepared to take responsibility for some of this. That's the situation in which we're likely to get aid. So there are things we can do, and those affect just the problem, not just the problem we have today, but the problem we have in the future. And they'll have an impact, and there's a good example of it this year I want to share with you. As I said before, last year we reduced our overall employment by almost 200 people, largely through an early retirement program in order to minimize the impact on individuals. This did a couple of things. It reduced our compensation costs. Obviously, if we're not paying the people who are here, they're in the retirement program. But also, in some senses as importantly, in terms of the long-term impact, it reduced our obligation to pay into the retirement program for those people. And because it was accelerated, remember the retirement program does two things. It eliminates the cost, but it also accelerates the date at which that cost is eliminated. And because of that, we do not have to make pension payments for these people this year, all year. And that has had a significant positive impact on it. So the impact of that, along with the moderation in wage increases that I talked to you about before, has resulted in a reduction of our projected pension cost by almost $5.9 million. Now look, the total increase is still $17.1 million. It's 55%, so it's a punishing number. But $6 million is real money, folks. It had an impact this year, and it'll have an impact next year, and the following year, and the following year. And that is considerable help as we begin to chip away with this program, and by the way, buy credibility in these places I've talked about. So it is, in fact, an example of the things we can do, and it's an example of something else. Deal with it before you have no choice. The fact that we dealt with it last year means that we're going to get benefits from that action for 3, 4, 5 years. And that will help us keep that number under control, not just this year, but in the future. If you wait till the last minute, then all of that benefit is lost. And you have to just deal with it as a gross number. So, one of the things we've been able to do in this particular case also is the fact that Tier 6 came in. A lot of people don't like Tier 6. It doesn't reduce benefits particularly, but it does impose more obligation on the employees. But I'll give you an example of what it's meant to us. It's meant to us that when we hire a new police officer, the annual cost for that police officer is almost $12,000 less than it was before. What does that mean? That means we can hire 25 new police officers and know we can afford it. So it has had a positive impact on us. It may not be the impact some wanted, but one of the things that's happened in this city and across this state, we've been laying people off to pay for these benefits. And that is a race to the bottom. We need to figure out another way to deal with this problem. And what I have done with those savings is I plowed them right back into the police department and the fire department. That's why we have those classes. And we'll do that in the future if we can come to a way to manage the way to pay for this. So it's changes like this that make a difference. And quite frankly, we're going to have to find ways to do more of it in order to have the long-term impact that I'm talking about. Now, you noticed, I think, later or earlier, I said we resisted the temptation to increase taxes, even though we could have and have in the past. Some of you will challenge this decision in light of the fact that we've imposed obligations on people. We have less employment. We've cut back in various areas. I'd ask you to think about the history of tax increases in upstate New York, because I think it's a cautionary tale. The tax base has grown only modestly in upstate New York. In fact, in many cases, lagged inflation. And as that has declined in various places, or not grown, we've chased the money with rate increases. In other words, if you don't have the property tax increase, you just keep raising the rate to try to get the same amount of money. The highest rates in the state, and some of the highest rates in the entire country, are where the lowest property values exist. A study recently conducted showed that the highest rate in the state of New York is in Binghamton. That's hardly a place that can afford it. Now, we're not as bad as Binghamton. We're substantially less. But we have essentially the same problem. And so what is this rate issue? It's a race to the bottom. It's a way to make yourself permanently uncompetitive. We were lucky here. We're lucky in the sense that we've been continuing to invest in our community, and you've seen in the last 5 years an increase in property values. And that increase has occurred not only in the residential, but it's occurred in the commercial area as well. But the best way to choke it off, the best way to choke it off is keep raising that rate and taking the money. We've got to get off of this issue. We've got to get off and wean ourselves from this practice of constantly increasing the rate in order to chase the money. And by the way, it doesn't work anyway. A 2% increase in our taxes, in our real estate taxes, generates only $3.2 million. It's a lot of money, but as you can see from the stuff I've discussed with you here, it isn't going to come close to solving this problem. So what we wind up doing is beating up our citizens and not getting the problem solved anyway. We need to wean ourselves from that practice. I cannot promise you that we'll never raise taxes again. That'll depend on what the choices our future brings. But we don't need to do it this year, and we shouldn't do it when we don't. And that's what I've done this year, or proposed this year. So another thing that I've done here that you've seen is that I've proposed that we draw only modestly on the city's existing reserves, $3.5 million. Certainly less than available. Now, as with the tax levy, those will say, well, why? Why did you do that? It's available to you. Take it. You know, don't make it difficult on yourself. Most of our reserves are pledged or otherwise legally restricted for purposes that make them unavailable. But even if they're unavailable, nonetheless, there's more that we could use. To me, this ignores where the biggest challenge is. The biggest challenge is not this year. It's next year and next year and next year. And if you spend it now, what you've done is reduced your flexibility, potentially gotten yourself in a situation where you're going to destroy your credit rating and your capacity to borrow. And that's exactly what's happened in a number of municipalities around New York already. And so we need to be mindful of that issue and of the discipline it requires. There's a principle here. There's a principle when you talk about tax capacity, reserves, and spending, like I just did. We need to resist the approach that says if you tax it if you can, spend the reserves if you can, wait until you can do it no longer, and then hope for a bailout from the state. And if it doesn't come, lay off hundreds, reduce services, and blame it on the last guy. It sounds silly a little bit when I say it, but you can find examples of it in New York today. So, remember, there's a structural definition here that we've provided to you with respect to what our deficit is, and it goes like this. Our escalating government expense has collided with our capacity and willingness to pay. There are two parts to the definition, aren't there? Capacity, how much you can, and willingness to pay. This means that we shouldn't spend it just because we have it. And beyond prudence, you know, beyond sort of discipline, there's another truth in there we have to remember. This money, the money that we have in taxes and the money we can raise in taxes, the money we have in reserves, it doesn't belong to us as employees, it doesn't belong to the unions, and it doesn't belong to Tom Richards. It belongs to the citizens. And in upstate New York, those citizens are already overburdened. Now, this shouldn't be taken to mean, at least from me, that I'm not one who believes that government, or that I'm one that does believe that government expenditures are bad or inherently suspicious. I'm a believer in the good that government can do. And particularly in places like Rochester, I'm a believer that we need to do it. You will see evidence of that all over town, and you certainly will see evidence of it in this budget. It is because I'm a believer in what the capacity of government to do good that I'm willing to work hard to preserve that capacity. We need to look beyond the present, we need to look beyond the next political cycle, and we need to exercise some discipline in the interest, not of saving money, but in the interest of the good that government can do. Now, there is an example in this budget of what I mean by that, and it's an example that some will not like. It has to do with the health care benefits that our employees enjoy. Currently, union employees make no contribution to the cost of the Family Core Health Plan, which provides good coverage, and are provided with a health reimbursement account of between $475 and $800 a year. This is a result of an agreement that led to the selection of a single provider and very substantial savings. It was fair when it was made, and it's fair today as we continue to implement it, but it's not sustainable. And it's out of step, not only with the private sector, but it's out of step with the rest of the public sector in this state. Non-union employees have arrangements that vary largely with their employment, requiring almost no contributions to the basic family plan, and in some cases as much as 10%. They're provided with an HRA of $700 a year. I cannot in good conscience say to the citizens that I'm going to raise your taxes to sustain this level of benefit or use reserves and compound the problem in the future. We're going to have to address it. There is a current agreement with the unions that provides that beginning January 1st, we'll implement a cost-sharing program under which all active employees, union and non-union, and again, I believe we should all be treated the same way here. I don't see the basis for a difference on this issue. We'll be responsible for paying one half of the amount of any insurance premium increase. That's only one half of the increase, not of the total. And that's capped, the increase, the total increase is capped this year at 12%. And the HRAs will no longer be funded. You see this chart over here, which shows you what's happened. In fact, medical costs have replaced pension costs as the most significant threat to the city. They cost almost as much, in fact, essentially the same amount this year as pensions, and will continue to increase for a long time. Now, that's not just the city or the employees' fault. That's a product of the health care issues that grip this country. But we have to face it. It's an issue we have to address. The pension problem does eventually can go down because of these other tiers that have been implemented. So it goes up to a little less than $60 million and begins to go down. This doesn't go down. And this chart that I'm showing you already has in it the cost sharing that I just described. So you can see what we're faced with here. We estimate that the cost saving for only a half a year that will be impacted by this is around $2.7 million, but we're still paying almost $4 million in additional costs for this year. Now, this is not an attack on somebody's benefits, but quite the opposite. It's a recognition that good benefits are important. It's a recognition that they're important enough, quite frankly, but we got to figure out how to afford them. Or, as has happened in some other places, we'll lose them. And so the time to get at it is now. Just as I showed you with the pension program, if you let it go and don't deal with it until you're out of options, then it becomes a yes and no proposition. And with respect to benefits, it's much too important for us to get into a situation where it's yes or no. We need to deal with it otherwise. So we don't have to, I don't think, lose these reasonable benefits, but we do have to address the some change. The adjustments we have in here are unlikely to be enough to ultimately solve the problem, but they nonetheless are at least a start. You know, and we have to think about how we deal with these issues differently. What we want, all of us, needs to be measured against what the taxpayer can afford. Fair in this situation is not just a matter of what's fair to us as employees, but what's fair to the taxpayer. It is a broader concept of fair, and we need to work together, quite frankly, city employees and unions, to develop plans that preserve the importance of these benefits, as we have done in some of the areas with pensions, and that they're affordable. Affordable not just for the taxpayer, but affordable for us as employees. And this means we're going to have to be open to dealing with this differently. It's adjustment in benefit terms, it's higher contributions and co-pays, it's adjustments in how we decide to relate these costs. Should they all be related to how long you've been here, or should they be related in some senses to how much you earn, therefore how much you can afford to pay? Options that allow employees to choose levels of benefits, but those level of benefits reflect the true cost of doing them or of providing them. And there will be others. And there are plenty of examples in this country, some of them right down State Street, of what happens if you don't deal with this problem, the tragic consequences of not dealing with this problem before it's too late. There's an existing labor management committee from which a new memorandum of agreement with respect to health care may emerge. The Deputy Mayor Reedon is in charge of that for the city. It was the same group that produced the good results in the last agreement that mutually benefited the city and its employees, and I'm hopeful that it will address this issue successfully again. And it's to everyone's credit and everyone's benefit if we figure out how to do it. Now, in my State of the State address, I stated some principles that I was going to apply with respect to this budget. And I want to sort of refresh your recollection about what they were and hope that you see them in what the budget has in it. The first principle, and I've referred to this just now, is that public employees are not demons here that are committed to our destruction. I can tell you they are, by and large, hardworking. Some of them take incredible risks on our behalf. But city workers find themselves in a system here that needs to be more productive and efficient. And there are ethical issues for us as the people who make these decisions with respect to these benefits that have been promised to people and for which they have worked. We simply cannot walk away from them. If we can't walk away from them, that means we have to deal with them. And that's what I'm trying to do. Because reasonable benefits are important, and it's my goal to figure out how to pay for them. Nonetheless, as I've said before, there will have to be some changes. Because if we don't get control of the system, the real danger is the innocent get shot with the guilty. And we see examples of that in the two things that I've talked about today with respect to pension and health care. It is not a matter of finding fault. This isn't somebody's fault. This isn't something somebody did wrong. But it is a matter of dealing with the problem that we must admit we all have. Government is not the gift that keeps on giving. It can break, and when it does, we all get hurt. So, I have applied this principle in preparing this budget, as I hope you've just seen. As a second principle, there's a legitimate structural problem here that won't go away by arguing over the bits and pieces of it. Even in differences of millions of dollars, and you've seen some of those adjustments made in the charts that we've showed you, while important in the short run, and important also in the long run, we'll not change the ultimate course. We have to take this seriously and not argue over the bits and the pieces. That chart that you see here was adjusted for both the changes in the pensions that I described and in health care. And you can still see that it's threatening to us. Threatening in a way that we're going to need some help from the state, but threatening in a way that we've got to make sure we control our own destiny. You have a lot more success solving that problem on the far side of the chart if you start working on it in this part of the problem. If you wait until you get to the far side of the chart, it's all over. And that's why we need to start addressing these problems now. I promised, and tried to approach it this way, that I'll do my level best to mitigate the immediate impact. But attempts to avoid the truth will not solve the problem. And this is another principle that I've applied in this budget. As a third principle, we need to have the fortitude to make decisions now that will preserve our flexibility and stability in the future. Through the good offices of people whose stewardship of the city preceded me and others, we've accumulated some reserves. And we have been using those reserves for the last several years, including this year. However, I will not follow the advice to resist expense control until our reserves are exhausted. And I applied that principle in this budget. But finally, as a final principle here, I intend for this city to thrive. I'm not interested in coming up with a plan that gets us by. We have challenges, and we also have resources. We are stable financially, and I intend for us to stay that way, even though we need to work at it. We have resourceful, capable people, and this city has educational, cultural, and not-for-profit institutions, the envy of cities our size all across the country, and many cities twice our size. In the face of difficult national and regional times, we are still making progress. The situation in which we find ourselves and these principles that I've articulated for you do not describe a point of balance and change, but they do not point to pulling back, not for our city and not for Rochester. We need to keep investing. We need to keep focusing and finishing. We need to pursue our goals in the areas of economic development, public safety, and education. In the State of City Address, I gave you a city that was stable, strong, and moving forward, despite expected and unexpected challenges, and with ample reason for optimism. I said that is the way I intend for this city to stay, and today I give you a budget that implements that commitment. It's a budget for a city that intends to thrive. Thank you very much.